for America.
This is turning into a regional conflict, which does pose a threat to the security of the United States.
Only Iraq can save Iraq.
Fighting for Idaho.
No,
there was at least one shot fired within the car.
He started to get down, but the officer still approached with his weapon drawn, and he fired several more shots, and my friend died.
Fighting for you.
What the heck's going on with the world? You got Gaza. You got Iraq. You got Syria. You've got the Christians being slaughtered. You've got the Chinese. Am I leaving something out? Oh, the border.
Boise's Mr. Right, Kevin Miller in the morning.
That's a lot of ding-dongs.
On 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
And 580 KIDO, K. Miller with you. Thank you all for joining us. Phone numbers here, 580-5436. 580-KIDO, and one of the top big stories has to be the bombing continuing in not only Iraq, but in Israel. There's another ceasefire going on, and the idea of just what the heck is going on in that region. We're also waiting for our friend Ken Blackwell to join us from the Coalition for Mortgage Securities, who, why don't we go to Ken right now. Ken, good morning.
Good morning, Kevin. How are you doing?
Once a Buckeye, always a Buckeye.
Here you go, brother.
Well, before we get rolling here, how do you think the Buckeyes are going to do this year?
Well, I think they'll field a good, strong team. You know, their league is competitive, but I think the Buckeyes will do just fine.
Well, I'm sure Coach Meyer will be happy to hear that. Of course, a lot of controversy going on with OSU. You got the band director now under charges. Incredible! It's almost like the government.
In the Woody Hayes tradition, I'm sure.
And that guy from Clemson will never be the same, sir.
There you go.
Let's talk a little bit about the state of housing today. We can't believe that it was only a few years ago that Time Magazine actually had a cover story saying that, you know, the American dream was dead, and that's owning a home. Where are we at today?
Well, we're struggling. Contracts to purchase housing were down in June. We still haven't created an environment where private capital is encouraged. So things are sluggish. You know, although there are a lot of folks who are pounding their chest talking about we have finally gotten into the midst of full recovery, economic recovery, it's really not looking that way in the housing market. And our group is basically going around the country speaking and working with others who want to protect and ensure the availability and affordability of the 30-year fixed mortgage, but more importantly, to reestablish a greater appreciation and sense of the rule of law so that we can attract private capital, because private capital is the heart of American capitalism, and that rule of law must be acknowledged and respected in order for properly functioning markets to be in full force.
Well, and why is that in jeopardy?
Well, the rule of law is in jeopardy because, you know, in 2008 there was a crisis, and there was a call for support and basically pension funds, funds of hardworking Americans and other investors came to the forefront and were promised that if and when there was a recovery, they would realize a return on their investment. Well, sure enough, in 2012, the federal government, the Treasury Department, reversed on that promise. And when the market started to bounce back, the federal government made its money back. They scooped up all the profits and left investors and big investors that represented a lot of hardworking Americans holding an empty bag. And so we believe that there's no way that private capital is going to, you know, dive back in the pool. Unless there's a clear signal that the rule of law has been reestablished and that a sense of fairness has been established, not only for homeowners and the government, but for private capital investors.
Well, and if that money is lost, I mean, where do you have trust when it comes to investing these days when, Mr. Blackwell, as you know, you've got the stock market blown up. Jobs aren't correlating to that the first time in history. And 80% of the folks not in the markets because they believe it's voodoo.
Yeah, and that's the real problem. And so, you know, we have three objectives, and that is to reorganize Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac as private bond guarantors funded by private capital. We want to protect and ensure the continued availability of the 30-year fixed mortgage rate, because that's been at the heart of the American dream of home ownership. And then, like I said in the beginning, reestablish the rule of law. And in order for the first things to happen, the reorganization of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac as a private bond guarantor funded by private capital, and to protect and ensure the fixed 30-year fixed mortgage rate, we have to reestablish the rule of law, and we have to make sure that those investors were in the game in 2008 and promised that they would get a return on their investment when the market came back, that they are not left holding an empty bag.
Ken Blackwell joining us here at 580 KIDO. Now, I've got to hit you with another thing here. I did you have anything to do with the RNC going to Cleveland?
I was rooting on Cincinnati, but Ohio is a very important state in elections, in presidential elections. There hasn't been a Republican to win the White House without carrying Ohio. It wasn't a hard sell on Ohio. Being a former mayor of Cincinnati, I was rooting on Cincinnati, just as Mayor Coleman, I think, was rooting on Columbus. But you know, we weren't going to locate in Columbus, and so now he's shifted his gears and he's trying to convince the DNC to bring in their election to their convention to Columbus, so it might be an interesting time to find both of the conventions held in Ohio, because it's going to be ground zero once again.
Well, here Sam Weiss isn't happy about it.
I can imagine that.
Well, and for people listening here, which is where we are in Idaho at 580 KIDO, I mean, I thought that Columbus or Cincinnati would get it, because that's where the good people are, the Republicans. Heck, Cleveland, that's occupied territory. That's where literally all the Democrats are in Cuyahoga County.
Well, that's what Ed Rollins, a good buddy of mine, was saying. For the life of him, he said, I can't figure out why they chose Cleveland. But being a former statewide official, where the votes of Cleveland counted, equally as the votes in Cincinnati and Columbus, I'm glad that Ohio has captured it, even if I don't understand the logic of choosing Cleveland over Cincinnati. And all of my buddies in Cleveland have to understand that I'm a Cincinnati Reds and a Cincinnati Bengals fans, and I want to make sure that every opportunity we have, we beat the Cleveland Indians and the Cleveland Browns. So in that competition, I was rooting for my hometown.
No, I'm with you. But from a practical political point of view, you've got a lot of heavy union folks, a lot of big Dems with capital Ds. And, you know, you want to go where you're welcome. And I'm not saying that, you know, the home of LeBron, Northeast Ohio there, or Johnny Manziel isn't welcoming. But you have to wonder, you know, are the cabs going to run on time and everything else? Just because, you know what I'm talking about.
I agree. Look, the rule of thumb for conservative Republicans and Republicans in general, when they're running statewide, a victory is to only lose Cuyahoga County, where Cleveland's located, by 160,000 votes or less. So a victory,
yes,
is defined by how low the margin of defeat is kept.
Exactly. Yes, and they like to count the votes there a lot. Home of, you know, such great politicians as Dennis Kucinich. He's from up there.
Yeah, some Democratic voters never die.
Ken Blackwell joining us here at 580 KIDO. Mr. Blackwell, what about the state of America? You love America, certainly a national political figure. We see you all the time on the big shows. Where are we? And Is there any hope for some inspiration here?
Well, look, Kevin, as I've said from the beginning, and wrote a book with Ken Kukowski on it, this president has been true to his promise to fundamentally transform our country. He made that promise to Americans and supporters about 5 days or a week before the election in 2008. And we have a president that wants to transform our market economy into a government-controlled economy and transform our family-centered society into a government-centered society. But most importantly for me, he wants to transform our national philosophy, founded upon the primacy of the individual and the supremacy of God, to one founded upon the primacy of the collective good and the supremacy of the central government. And we're in the midst of a struggle. Those of us who understand the essence of American exceptionalism understand that we're at our best when we limit government and trust Americans as individuals and communities to carry the ball down the field. If we don't stay engaged in this game, he will complete that transformation, and I think that that's reflected in his concentration of executive orders circumventing the power of the Congress. That means that the folks in the Congress have to step up and speak up. They can't just continue to take it. And Americans at the local level, state level, have to, in fact, to speak out and demand that this administration moves away from a philosophy of, you know, America without borders, move towards a strong national defense where we protect our interests across the globe. And most importantly, or as importantly, because the other two might turn on that, our ability to protect ourselves, is that we get our economy growing again. And as we were just saying at the beginning of the segment, you know, capital seeks the path of least resistance and greatest opportunity. And right now, this president has put in place a philosophy, a framework, and a practice that is anti-capital. As a result, we see very sluggish growth and recovery and job creation. And we have Americans falling out of the workplace at a time when I know that many Americans want to go back to work. So we just have to speak up. Frederick Douglass once said, those who are whooped easiest are whooped most often. And we just got to say enough is enough and fight back.
I'm tired of getting whooped.
That's right.
Hey, a quick question for you at 580KIDO. I know you've got a bolt here, Mr. Blackwell, but has anybody solicited your support, or are you thinking about running for the big office come 2016?
No, that's not in my future. And yes, I've had several ask if I would be interested in at least exploring the possibility, if they so choose to run, to being engaged with them, and I'm just not ready to make a commitment to any of the possible candidates at this time, who are personal friends and political allies, some who have gone to battle on certain issues. I'm a keen observer and analyst, but I will never, ever pass an opportunity to be fully engaged in the nominating process for the leader of our party.
Mr. Blackwell, once again, we appreciate it, and go Buckeyes.
Go Buckeyes. All the best.
Take care.
Take it easy, Kevin.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye. There you have it, Ken Blackwell. What an enjoyable conversation. And you remember the last time we had Mr. Blackwell on, he sat next to us at the convention, and remember that he started laughing about the description with Laura Ingraham. And people say, you know, Kevin, what are these people like? And look, I'm like you. I'm sitting around having flapjacks and pancakes or what have you. But Laura Ingraham, huge star on the big shows, huge star on Fox News, does a radio show, does a really good job. But whether you call it focus or she just doesn't like to talk to people, she's doing her show and, you know, you've seen the TV or you've been here. Or when we're on location, when you're on a commercial break, you take off your headphones and you kind of goof off a little. Well, not her. She just stays there and intently focuses. So Ken Blackwell starts grabbing papers and starts throwing them, bouncing them off her head because she won't acknowledge him. It was the most unusual thing that I've ever seen. Anyway, 620 at 580 KIDO. Thank you for starting your day with us. Coming up next, we look at...
The president made it clear that this was to avert the humanitarian crisis, that they were taking these actions and to protect American military personnel that are in Erbil and in Baghdad. That's not a strategy. That's not a policy.
Boy, what are we doing in Iraq? And
it's just an unbelievable tragedy. Our hearts go out to, obviously, Kevin and his family.
Kevin Ward killed, 19, 20 years old. He's a dirt track racer. Tony Stewart, a big star, a man that people love or love to hate. What happens when people go crazy on the track or on the roads, avoiding road rage? Let's talk about it next, shall we? Time to get you to work safely.
Glenn Beck, weekdays at 9. Now back to Kevin Miller on 580 KIDO. Idaho's first radio station.
And welcome to Monday, Kevin Miller in the morning. Don't forget, in the 7 o'clock hour, it is Dave Petso. But going back to who should or should be accountable for this death at the dirt track in New York.
There is no evidence in hand or no facts that would support a criminal charge or support criminal intent on the part of anybody.
There you have it. That is Phil Pulvero, the local sheriff there, who says...
The caution on the track was out as the result of the car spinning out, and there's no indication that the caution was not being observed by the cars, including Mr. Stewart's.
And that is the big question, the idea of proving intent. We're looking at Tony Stewart now. The reason why this impacts all of us, how many times have we been on the road? How many times have we been driving and somebody tailgates us or somebody tries to speed by us or cuts us off and just causes a mess of things? And we saw this in the dirt track race. These guys race pretty heavily, and we're not here to talk about NASCAR, but we are here to talk about responsibility. So the kid, Kevin Ward Jr., gets out, 19 years old, shakes his fist, comes at Stewart, and as I've said, I've seen the video, which isn't clearly evident of this, but I've heard it described as Stewart spun his tires out, Ward was walking towards him, the car veered into him, and then Mr. Ward is dead. Was it really worth it? Now, I go back to this story that I like to tell all the time, one of the first big stories I covered, and this was the first death of woman-on-woman road rage, where you have these two women going home, both family folks, both mothers, driving in their SUVs. There's something about bigger vehicles that seem to empower us, isn't there? That we feel invulnerable. Like, nobody ever is accused of road rage driving a Prius, right? I mean, God love them, those little eco cars. You're not going to intimidate somebody by driving right up to them. You're more intimidating in a Harley than you are somewhere else on those little cars. So these two go back and forth, and lo and behold, they get off at the same bridge or the same exit. One of them gets out, starts swearing at the other one, starts pounding, and I mean pounding, on her window. The woman, mortified, instead of picking up the phone that was next to her, decides she's going to send a message. So she picks up her gun, rolls down her window, and bam, shoots her. Shirley Henson, I think she might be out now. I think she got 13 years for the murder of Gina Henderson? Shirley Henson, Gina Foster, something like that. And I remember covering that case, being in court, thinking to myself, is it really worth it not seeing your son grow up, and for the family of the victim, what does that mean? I mean, whether we're overly caffeinated, too much sodium, not enough exercise, overly medicated, it's just not worth it. Tony Stewart should have understood this. Mr. Ward should have understood this. And there is no common sense for stupid, except we must ask ourselves, when these things go on, do we take a step back and act like adults and do the right thing? And again, I'll take your thoughts and calls on this accident if you've seen it over the weekend or heard about it. Is Mr. Stewart to blame or Mr. Ward to blame? I don't really believe that the sheriff, I mean, I love how we're so politically correct and dancing around everything where we're, you know, not assigning blame to this. Somebody is dead.
It's a shock. There's enough track authority and everybody else out here for track officials to keep things safe. But accidents do happen. Yeah. Such is life.
I thought the guy that got out of his car was a complete idiot. Because it's a live racetrack. You don't do that. Unless you're on fire, there's no reason to get out of your car.
Exactly. Except it's all about prestige and, as somebody likes to call it, machismo.
You know, it's a tragedy, and I'm not going to deny that at all. But, you know, to blame Tony Stewart for that, you can't.
There you have it. Much more coming up. Kevin Miller, 580 KIDO.
The brother-in-law of former U.S. Senator Larry Craig has been found dead. An Idaho Power Line team found him on a rural back road. He was belted in his truck, which had crashed.
Stewart had been taking part in a sprint car race in upstate New York when he struck and killed a driver, Kevin Ward Jr.
Making sense of a senseless world. Kevin Miller in the morning on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
6:38, Kevin Miller in the morning here at 580 KIDO. You know, I wish this was the good news show, and maybe that's exactly what we should start focusing in on, just the good news, the good works, whether it's the schools, whether it's the nonprofits, whether it's even, you know, getting the best back-to-school items. School starts, what, in the Treasure Valley August 25th? Something of that nature. And as I said a couple weeks ago, you start seeing the back-to-school things in the store, and I can remember being a kid all the time going, oh, no, back-to-school already. Do I really need the new Mead folder? Do I really need the new notebooks or what have you? And then all of a sudden, you know, it's coming. Of course, the parents are a lot happier than the kids, if you will. But, I mean, you just take a listen to this.
This is a humanitarian disaster, potentially on a massive scale.
Man, who wants to wake up to this? I don't know. I mean, do we have the Don't Worry, Be Happy song or something of that nature? Maybe Rachel Sutherland will cheer us up. I don't know. It's worth a shot. Rachel Sutherland joining us from Fox News Radio at 580 KIDO with Kay Millie in the morning. Good morning, Rachel.
Good morning.
Now, when last we talked, I wondered if you would be doing the Sunday morning show duty, and apparently not, but I watched every show, so I thought I'd give you a quiz on them.
Okay.
Just kidding. there is some serious news here, and it just seems like just more and more money being spent, more political capital being exposed with this airlift, with the airstrikes going on right now in Iraq.
Well, there's a lot of different reaction to the airstrikes, especially here in Washington. Lawmakers like Republican Senator Lindsey Graham saying that the president really isn't doing enough, saying that these terrorists, these Islamist extremists in Iraq would take aim at America. And so there's concern there. And he's saying the president needs to do more. There are others like Dick Durbin, the majority whip, who's saying, look, no, we do not need boots on the ground. What the president is doing is more than enough. And so you have a great division and opinion on this. And, of course, polls show that Americans are just really war-weary and not wanting to go back into Iraq.
Well, and then you have, again, this humanitarian issue and Ed Henry asking the administration over the weekend, why do we not want to destroy ISIS totally, whether or not that's a reality.
Right. And can we destroy them in totality? I mean, this is a group that is just far extreme. We think of Al-Qaeda being extreme. These people are beyond. They've got these Christians and people of other religious minorities trapped on a mountain without any food or water, and we're hearing just terrible things being done to these people simply because of who they are, what they believe. And so I think most people can agree something needs to be done. But, again, the idea of actually sending troops into Iraq is something that doesn't sit well with a lot of people.
Well, indeed. And then you have to wonder, there's been a lot of atrocities in Syria. There's been a lot of atrocities in Iraq and throughout the region. What made this so unique? And I believe it's because the Kurds had something to do with it. And if these ISIS took over the Kurd territory, or Kurdistan, or whatever you want to call it, you know, you could see problems with our allies, the Turks, as well.
Well, we are arming the Kurds. That's new this morning coming out from senior government officials who weren't named, that that the U.S. is arming the Kurds in the fight here. Typically, we would arm just the Iraqi government, that arms would go straight to them. But we're hearing that we are arming the Kurds, and that, interestingly, those arms are not coming from the Pentagon. So you would think of something like the CIA.
That is interesting because, again, that's a lot of controversy there on Capitol Hill. Rachel Sutherland joining us from Fox News Radio here at 580 KIDO, KMLE in the morning. One of the things that that gets me, though, is does the president have anybody on Capitol Hill besides members of his own administration that are outwardly supporting this? I mean, we talked about Lindsey Graham. You mentioned Senator Durbin. But is anybody saying, drive on, Mr. President?
Actually, interestingly, Senator Dianne Feinstein of California, Democrat, is saying she wants the president to do more, that she's concerned that if we don't stop them there, that we'll be dealing with a stronger, even more difficult situation. So, yeah, she'd like to see the president do more, but she's kind of a rogue voice a bit in the Democratic Party.
Now, Rachel, based on all these reports that you've been monitoring in your sources, does this have any impact perceptually among the folks worried about the big midterms because we're, 90 days or almost 90 days out?
As far as the midterms are concerned, I haven't heard a whole lot of discussion on how that could impact it. I think a lot of the opinion is falling on party lines. And I think, though, as Americans go to the polls, they will have the idea of another combat situation in their minds. I don't think that most Americans are going to want to do that. At the same time, they know the situation is extreme and the humanitarian crisis and definitely could be a threat to the United States. So it'll be interesting to see how people vote, whether or not this is a top-of-the-mind issue or not.
And, of course, everybody's out on vacation.
Oh, right. Yeah, exactly. Congress is out on vacation, the president going to Martha's Vineyard. So, okay, I know he's getting updates and so on, but it does sort of feel like a rudderless ship. But certainly people are weighing in, and the president is being briefed around the clock on this situation.
Rachel, thank you.
Thank you.
All right, Rachel Sutherland joining us here at 580-KIDO, and your thoughts right now at 580-5436, 580-KIDO.
Only Iraq can save Iraq.
Dick Durbin saying it's time for Iraq to stand up. That's a very good point. I mean, think about this, and let's say the Iraqis, and with all due respect to the Iraqis here, maybe they're like little kids. And you know what I'm talking about. You're a parent or you're a teacher. Little Johnny, little Timmy, little Kevy. Sometimes it takes a while for them to get things. Like for me, it was always, working around the house with my dad over the weekends and on, after school, and we'd be putting in floors, we'd be putting up panel, we'd be chopping trees, endlessly chopping trees. And, you always got to do the fun stuff, chopping the trees. I had to like stack the wood. And when I was working with somebody over the weekend, and they go, man, you're a pretty good assistant. You know what you're doing here. And I said, yeah, I used to do this stuff all the time. And usually, when a father passes along something to a son, it sticks, and he goes, well, you should be doing your own stuff. I go, nope, I hated every minute of it, didn't stick with me. And maybe that's the point we are with the Iraqis. No matter how much money we give them, no matter how many times we put the training wheels back on, they're just not going to get it. And maybe that's a little too brutal here, but at 580-5436, 580-KIDO, sometimes you have to accept your limitations. Sometimes you have to just sit back and go, well, enough is enough.
Mr. President, you have never once spoken directly to the American people about the threat we face from being attacked from Syria, now Iraq. What is your strategy to stop these people from attacking the homeland? They've expressed a desire to do so.
There's another point of view by Lindsey Graham, senior senator from South Carolina. Looks like he's going to roll to reelection. But, I mean, think about this. Think about this from your perspective and whether you have been one of the folks that, from the 116th or active duty or reserves, or maybe you're a contractor and you went over there, and just all the money. You take a look at all the videos that we shot, which is a very brief glimpse into life in Iraq, Camp Victory and everything else, and, Camp Liberty and all these palaces and such, and all the money that we spent just shipping bottled water over there. And we turned it all over to the Iraqis. And this is what, after 10 years of propping them up? Sooner or later, I think you got to cut your losses. Sooner or later, I think you got to contain the region. You know, you're not going to sit there and bomb everybody back to oblivion, are you? No, of course not. Yeah, of course not. But the idea that all of a sudden we're going to, you know, send troops back in. Yeah, that's easy for me to say. I'm too old to be a troop. Or for some pot-bellied bureaucrat in D.C. to say. But if it's your dad, it's your mom, it's your brother, it's your husband, or your wife, or your mom, you don't want them to go back there because it was a giant waste. I mean, isn't there something to be said, as callous as this is, Kevin at KIDOAM.com, that we can't fight everybody's battles for them, right? I mean, we train the Iraqi military. Obviously, they're competent. They were competent under Saddam, but not so much now. Much more coming up, 6:48. Coming up, we're going to talk about National Breastfeeding Month and what it means to you. We promise in-depth team coverage here. No derringers in the brassieres, though. 6:48, Kevin Miller in the morning. Time to get you to work.
John Hannity, weekdays at 3. Now, back to Kevin Miller on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
And don't forget Dave Petzl coming up next hour here at 580 KIDO. I do want to share with you a story that we did get a chance to air last week from Channel 7. And this involves public breastfeeding and whether or not there should be a law protecting mothers' rights to breastfeed in public.
About breastfeeding in public, no matter whether you're covered up or not, it's not prohibited, but it's also not protected. In fact, Idaho is just one of two states without laws supporting nursing mothers. Nursing is something some local moms feel so passionately about, they wanted to celebrate World Breastfeeding Week with professional photos feeding their babies.
It's what I need to do as a mom for my child, so I plan on continuing no matter what.
But Lana Stevenson says she's experienced some criticism for feeding her child in public.
There is definitely some anxiety for me as a new mom and breastfeeding in public, just because I have experienced some negativity with it.
Stevenson and Boise mom Abby Boltz say they had no idea the laws surrounding nursing in public in Idaho.
I was pretty surprised, actually. Like I said, it's just knowing that there's so many women out there who breastfeed and to know that we're not protected against that, I was a bit shocked.
In the Gem State, while breastfeeding in public places isn't prohibited, it also isn't protected like it is in most other states.
If we were on someone's private property, for example, there's no recourse that we would have. We could even be removed for trespassing.
It's legislation some in Idaho have been fighting for years.
But I know we were one of the last two states that do not have the law at all.
The Idaho Breastfeeding Law Coalition has even drafted a bill and sent it to legislators. Corey Penkert says most support it, but so far they haven't been able to find someone to sponsor it. As for those against the proposal, Penkert says most just think it's not needed.
I mean, there's a lot of controversy about it. There's a lot of individual people who think it's inappropriate for a woman to be feeding a baby in public.
Well, that's a good point at 580-5436, 580-KIDO. Now, I hope this makes you smile. Yes, this is an actual news story where you have mothers that have seriously raised the issue whether the legislature here in the great state of Idaho should take their time, their effort, and energy to protect breastfeeding. Now, is this a victimless crime? Is it a habit? Is it a job that should be protected? When you see somebody breastfeeding in public, are your eyes not drawn to the breasts? And whatever happened, some privacy. But you have these young ladies at 580-5436, 580-KIDO. I love the clip where she says, if it's private property, we can even be asked to leave. Now, we've seen a lot of breastfeeding militantism in the old days. You know, just last year, 2 years ago, we had people that, you know, were mad that somebody told somebody to cover up their breastfeeding at an airport. So what happened? You had the radical militant breastfeeding moms go to an airport and have a big breastfeed, if you will. And it kind of does show you how ridiculous our society is today. I think that most people, most people with a sense of, how should I be politically correct and point this out, with a same sense of decency would not want to breastfeed in public, right? But now you have these groups of individuals that believe it's their rights, and because there's no law on the book, I mean, are we discriminating against breastfeeders? Are we? And I hope this makes you laugh, because gosh knows the border, Iraq, and everything else is just going to make you frown. But think about this as we move along. This, again, is a real story. Now, I know we have a law that makes us balance the budget. I know we have a law concerning the health exchange. I know we have a lot of laws, but should we really, I mean, what would be the debate? Could we have somebody who would dare speak out against the proposed breastfeeding law? Would we have breastfeeders hiding in closets? Would we have them having a sit-in at the governor's ceremonial office? Could we see something just like we saw with Add the Words? Think about that. I'd love to get your thoughts on that. 580-5436, 580-KIDO. Let's get you to work. Coming up, we'll take your calls on the breastfeeding law and Dave Pezzo. Now, if that's not an eclectic mix before 7:30, I don't know what is. Keep it here. Stay informed. You're listening to Kevin Miller on 580-KIDO. Serving Meridian.